You're listening to Talking Transformation, the Powered by Publix podcast. Throughout this reflective 5-episode limited series, we'll share some innovative approaches our transformation clusters are implementing to advance equitable student outcomes through cross-institutional collaboration. In this episode, guest host Julia Chadwick and Powered by Publix Executive Director Julia Michaels will be discussing the work of the Western Cluster, specifically optimizing degree pathways with curricular analytics.
Hello, my name is Julia Chadwick, or JC for short, and I am an assistant director in the Office of Digital Transformation for Student Success at APLU. APLU is the Association of Public and Land-Grant Universities, and recently APLU has been working with 127 institutions broken into 14 small learning communities, or clusters, to address different problems in higher education through the Powered by Publix initiative. This initiative launched in 2018. So today, the purpose of this podcast is to highlight the work of the Powered by Publix initiative over the last few years. There are topics that have pushed the envelope in terms of collaboration, addressing challenging issues, and exploring solutions in innovative ways. We are having conversations with APLU staff who manage these clusters to learn more about their work around public university transformation, and also to learn about how the work came to be. If we want to scale what works, we have to know how those things were done, not just what was done. There may be some unique challenges that institutions faced and solutions that surfaced that can be shared across our networks. So I will be discussing the topic of optimizing degree pathways through curricular analytics, and I'll be speaking with my colleague, Julia Michaels. Julia, please introduce yourself to our audience before we get started.
Thanks, JC. My name is Julia Michaels. I'm the Executive Director for Powered by Publix and the manager for the Western Land Grant Cluster. So that's one group of institutions that investigated this topic of using curricular analytics to optimize degree pathways. So the Western Land Grant Cluster is actually focused on teaching and learning more broadly, and this is one of the strategies that they're using to improve student outcomes.
Fantastic. Thank you for that quick introduction. And let's just dive right in. So I will ask you, what does it mean to optimize a degree pathway? And why should institutions be focused on this?
That's a great question. The term optimize sounds very scientific. But really what optimizing means is creating a pathway that is the best fit for the student through that degree program. So you can imagine there are as many possible combinations of that degree program as there are students. It's very individualized. But how do you manage that at the university level? And how do you communicate that with advisors? That's really the challenge at hand here. So we know that degree programs are really kind of owned by colleges and departments. They have met their own priorities for how those programs are structured and what courses are included. Their priorities may be to get students through on time, but there are also a lot of other things that they're concerned about. And so really what the problem that curricular analytics is trying to address is how to examine those programs in a systematic way that really visualizes the problems and allows you to see where the pain points are. Because over time, if you're lax about examining your degree programs, you can end up with a pathway that really doesn't work for some students. And you see it in the data, how long it takes students to graduate with that degree. I mean, how many of them are going beyond 4 years? Is it even possible to graduate in 4 years with that degree? You can see it in the profile of students who end up enrolling or don't enroll in that program. But it's actually hard to see why that is, where students are getting stuck. You just know that they are. And it's hard to conceive of alternate course combinations that would lead to improved student success. But it's really important that schools do examine their programs and do it regularly because they, you know, if they aren't, they might be putting up barriers to students that they didn't intend.
Absolutely. And I think we know the decentralization of universities can really be a benefit. That's why different programs can be unique. But it can seem like a challenge, especially over time, if you don't have access to think of these things. So how did this come to mind? How did the cluster address this topic?
Well, first of all, they admitted that there was a problem. So that's the first step to a solution, right?
Yes,
they wanted
to
work on teaching and learning. But when they started to dig into that topic a bit more, what are the major issues here? What surfaced is names of programs or disciplines that they knew were problematic. I'm not going to name the disciplines here, but you can probably think of what they might be. You know, there's sort of a knowledge problem with certain disciplines that it's really hard to get it through in 4 years if you don't have AP credits, and that there's a lack of diversity in those programs. So they kind of knew where the problems were, but not what why or what could be fixed. And so they decided to use this tool. Someone in the group knew about it. I believe it was the University of Wyoming that brought the tool to our group. They used the tool Curricular Analytics to visualize the data and see where the problems lay. It's a free tool. It helps them to produce interactive degree maps that create visual representations of the relationships between courses. And how it works is you input your course data, and then you get this map. And it shows what they call blocking or delaying factors, as well as toxic course combinations. So these are courses when taken together, students are more likely to fail one or more of them, and then they get delayed. And it takes all of that information into account and gives you an overall score, which is the complexity score. So you can compare programs in the same discipline across universities. You could say, well, engineering program at this one school has a complexity score of X, and the one at this other school has a complexity score of Y, and why are they different? So it does allow you to compare across, not just within your university. So they didn't do this for all the programs at first. They just picked four that were common across the institutions in that cluster and did a little pilot of it. But they found the process so valuable, many of those schools went on to expand the tool to all of their programs, inputting all the program data from their course catalogs so that they could see if there were other problems they didn't know about.
That's wonderful. And I know we'll hear about it in other episodes of this podcast, but I know so many of the clusters have done a lot of great work by trying these little projects first, piloting something, and when they find success, or taking whatever they may learn and expanding it. So that's great to hear with a free tool at that, Curricular Analytics. So
still free.
Fabulous. Could you tell us a little bit more about what they learned? Clearly they expanded it, so it must have gone well, but what were some of those details? What did they see?
Sure. There are a few main takeaways. First of all, there is a relationship between the complexity score and student success. So programs that have really high complexity scores, like over 300, are incredibly difficult for students to complete on time. And they also seem to have low diversity among their enrolled students. But also, if the score is too low, students can struggle too. And we have some theories about that. I mean, we haven't published anything yet about definitively why this is, but the theory is they kind of wander through the curriculum without direction and just end up taking too many credits because there's not enough structure to the program. So there's actually a sweet spot or optimal level of complexity that you can try to find. And the new version of the tool that's coming out will allow you to actually move courses around to find that optimal pathway. What's going to get you to a program that's not too complex, but also is structured enough so that students take the right courses at the right times and finish on time.
That's great. We know we certainly don't want things to come off as too easy. These are competitive programs all over the board, regardless of discipline. So It sounds like, finding that level of complexity, there might have been some challenges in implementing this across campuses. Could you tell us what some of those big challenges were?
Sure, I will. But I want to address something else that you said too, JC, and that is, the competitiveness of the programs. One interesting detail that I want to mention is that they looked at the top programs in the country, like Stanford's mechanical engineering program, for example, and compared it with theirs. And actually, when you look across universities at the discipline level and the complexity score within that discipline at the top programs, you find actually those aren't the most complex ones. The most complex programs were not the top programs in the country. So actually those schools that have really, really good programs, they've found that optimal complexity score. Anyway, so you were asking about challenges. So what I would say, based on my experience with this group, putting in all of the data takes a lot of time. You actually do have to input the data. There is a way to upload it from a CSV file, but that involves actually getting the data cleaned and organized and ready to be uploaded, and that does take some time. And each institution's unique, so there are some quirks to overcome, like different emphases or specializations, and what do you do with those? So a lot of schools hired grad students to do it, so that did cost something. But the larger problem and challenge with this is the data only gets you so far if you're not ready to engage your faculty around those data. And it's a culture change challenge. So how do you engage faculty and persuade them that they should consider changes based on what the data show? So you have to have a plan for how you're going to do that if you want it to be a catalyst for change. Some deans and department chairs would be really open to making changes. They say, yes, I see there's a problem. But others will say we don't want to reduce the rigor of the program. So how do we preserve, you know, our program being rigorous and students learning what they need to, perhaps to take a licensing exam after they graduate. You know, one tactic is, like I just mentioned, comparing the complexity of your program to that of the top program in the discipline. And, you know, if you can see that they've inputted it into curricular analytics and making those comparisons, that could help guide you. Other faculty would say, you know, it's always been this way, and you have to remind them that they own the curriculum. They can make changes. They're the ones who are empowered to make these changes. So there's all sorts of opinions that you're going to get among the faculty when you start to dig into these data. And it's really, really important that faculty be your partners in this. Like, you can't come to them and just be like, there's a problem. It has to be a little bit more co-designed to get to that solution. Some strategies that have worked well are engaging faculty and department chairs as a group for a retreat or a workshop. So then it's not just, you know, nobody feels targeted. Finding some early adopters of the tool and having them talk to their peers so that they're hearing about it from another faculty member and not from a higher level administrator. Ultimately, the goal is to get this to be part of the program review process, whatever that looks like at the institution. But most schools are going to have some work to do on that culture change front before they can get there. And I think that's the most challenging thing.
Yeah, we know with transformation, it's a huge idea. It involves or should involve every part of a campus and really all of the stakeholders from faculty to students to leadership. So I think it's great that there are different ways to approach this. You've got to see some different reactions from faculty and also recognizing that this is not just a problem that is one person's fault or one faculty's fault or even one unit's fault, one course's fault. It really does need to be co-designed. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's a really important part to take home is this collaborative piece, bringing the evidence so everyone can kind of see and discuss it together. So what are some of the other recommendations you would offer to institutions that might be considering adopting curricular analytics?
So start small, start with a handful of programs, perhaps ones that you know are causing problems for your students where they're not completing on time or that they're struggling. You can start with just a few and see where that gets you, because it's just a lot of work to input the data. And I think for most institutions, there's a learning curve when they first start doing it, trying to figure out the tool and how to get used to it. The other recommendations I would have are just to talk to students and look at your student performance data, course pass rate data, gather that contextual information so you have a complete picture of what's going on, because the tool only really show you the relationships between courses and the programs and where those blocking factors are. It doesn't necessarily tell you why those courses are a problem, why pass rates are so low in those courses. So you do need other sources of data to contextualize the information. Tie the data to shared vision and goals. I think this is, again, important for getting faculty on board. Emphasize that this is a collective responsibility. It's not just about any one discipline or any one course. We really need to make sure that we're delivering on our promise to students that this is a four-year degree. And remember that it's just a tool. The larger process is more important. The conversation with faculty is more important. You take what you can from this tool and use it for your larger goals. And I think that could be incredibly valuable to your campus.
Fantastic. So to sum that up, again, start with a few programs. We'll keep it small, contained. That way you aren't overwhelmed by the amount of data you need to collect and look at. Talk to everyone, talk to our faculty, talk to our students, especially if you are in that kind of middle leadership position, getting that buy-in, that support, and connecting it to a larger vision and goals of the university or of your college. That's really, really good to hear. And it is just a tool. Like we mentioned, transformation is so much of the culture. You can lead a horse to water. You cannot make it transform into a unicorn.
I love that. That's a great analogy.
But it takes everyone. It really is not just on you, and it's not just on your faculty. So thank you for highlighting that. And where can our listeners go for more information?
So you can go to curricularanalytics.org to sign up for the tool, create an account. You can look at other programs that have made their degree pathways public. For a great example of faculty engagement, I would check out New Mexico State University's website. They have recordings of their faculty town hall, as well as video interviews with champion faculty. It's on the provost's website. I think you can just Google NMSU curricular analytics to get there. Also, Powered by Publix did a webinar a few weeks ago featuring some star users of the tool, as well as its co-creator, Dr. Greg Heilemann, who's at the University of Arizona. You can review the recording and the slides on our online learning exchange, and that's pxp.crowdstack.io.
Well, thank you again so much, Julia. This has been fascinating to learn more about this great tool, hearing more about these different projects that Powered by Publix has done. And I hope our listeners will be inspired to give a degree program optimization a try at their campus. Thank you all and have a great day.
Thank you, JC. It's a pleasure.
This has been Talking Transformation, the Powered by Publix podcast. This work is generously funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. To hear all five episodes, please search for Powered by Publix on SoundCloud.